Accession number 30620, Mr. Kurt Seldes, Reel 2. Now, so it was a new adventure arriving. You'd arrived in Cape Town. Now, yes. On the other hand, you'd not got much money, and although you were being helped by the Jewish community, I mean, what could they do? What happened?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what happened. They were saying, well, you have to occupy your children. We don't know what happened. They didn't find anything from my parents. My sister got an apprenticeship in a hairdressing shop. I got an apprenticeship in a men's material play, you know, where they sell, and I was laying up material, rolling it up, and this and the other.
As an
apprentice, just as a, call it as an apprentice worker. I cannot remember how much money, but it was very little. But with a very little, we could manage. I remember that at the big adventure, I could go to the market in Cape Town and buy a melon for sixpence. And for that sixpence, the colored fellow carried the melon home for me. I always remember he carried this home on his head, walking in front of me and said, "That's where you live." And I remember I lived in Tempest Kloof in Cape Town, in a very old small block of flats, which was already very dilapidated, but it was comfortable. It was one bedroom, a kitchenette, a small dining area, and the balcony, which was my bedroom.
Now tell me about a bit more about the work you did. Was it a sort of factory, or was it just a...
No, it was like a wholesale shop or business on the first floor in Cape Town.
And they just sold cloth?
And they just sold cloth, yeah, by the meter or whatever. And they just employed me to roll up the cloth, sweep the floor, do the basic things, and for that I got some money. I cannot remember exactly how much. My sister, also after a few days, she got an apprenticeship in a hairdressing shop, learning how to become a hairdresser. Most of the time was sweeping the floor. And but we both got some money, which was enough to keep us in food. I think my parents may have also got something from the Jewish organization, but as children one doesn't ask.
Did you see much of the Jewish community?
No. We met a few other Jewish people who also emigrated there. We told him our story, and we were assured that once you are in South Africa, don't worry, you'll be fine now. And we accepted it like that. We never gave it any further thought, and we started preparing our life for years to come. Everything went off very happily, with the exception that exactly 6 months on the date of arrival, the police knocked at the door and said, "Mr. and Mrs. Seldes, your visa has expired. You have to return to Italy." "Oh, we can't do that." And they said, "Well, I'm sorry, you have to." "Well, what is the alternative?" So again, we approached the Jewish community and they said, "Unfortunately, there's nothing else we can do. There are two things you can do. You can either return to Italy. We will immediately phone what they call the Bloomsbury House in London, which was an organization in London set up to help people immigrating into England. And so far as we then knew, it was that if somebody in England guaranteed £50 per person, the British government would then allow one person per £50 to come into the country, providing that that person who ought to give the £50 would look after them and see to their welfare, if you call it like that. I cannot give you details because as a youngster you weren't told much more. You were still children and you had said, keep your mouth shut, that is what it is. But that is as far as I remember. And we were then told, don't worry, the Bloomsbury House is organizing and it will be put into, okay, and when you come to the first port of call on the ship, contact the British consul and you will find that there is an immigration visa available for all four of you. So, I would say half-hearted, my parents packed whatever we had again. And we went back on the ship. Anxiously, we stopped.
So would this still be in 37, or are we aged into 38 now?
I'll be in 38. Now, it's 6 months later, but I cannot give you exactly
okay.
the dates.
Not sure. Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Let me put it this way. When did war broke out?
39.
So then it must have been 38, because the end of 38, because we arrived in Italy at the end, 39 the war. So we arrived in, we arrived in 39 already in Italy, so we must have come back in 39 early. The war broke out in September. So we must have arrived
so
in England
in the beginning,
January or February, we arrived in England.
So you had been in South Africa in 38. You'd emigrated to South Africa
correct,
in 38.
Right.
Okay.
So anyway, on the ship anxiety, we went to the few ports and the visa did not arrive. I think I remember the last port was Marseille and it still didn't arrive then. And then we arrived in Genoa and the visa still didn't arrive. So everybody left the ship. And we were not allowed to leave the ship because we did not have an entry visa into Italy. So the news got round that there's a Jewish family on the ship who cannot leave because they haven't got an entry visa into Italy. So my parents met then an English lady who I'm afraid I can't remember her name, who lived in London in Kensington, who listened to my parents and asked for what happened and how come. And my parents explained to her the situation that there's an organization in Bloomsbury House who said that they have a visa for us, but it was not transmitted to the British consul. And she guaranteed that her first visit would be to the Bloomsbury House to find out what happened. And there we were on the ship. Two policemen on the ship, nobody on the ship, no food, no organization was helping, and the only way we could get some food was we took two soup plates and we found some string, and my parents put some money, which I don't know how much, into the soup plates. We lowered it down to one of the police officers or guards, if you call them, and he went and he got spaghetti. And I always make the joke, we had spaghetti for breakfast, spaghetti for lunch, spaghetti for dinner. And we spent 2 nights on the ship with a mass of people all around there, and everybody shouted in Italian. And we couldn't speak Italian, so we didn't know what they were shouting at. Eventually, a rabbi arrived. And he said, parla italiano? And they said, no, mio no parla italiano, niente. So he said, man red mammeloschen? So I said, I read a bissel. You know, when your boy is like saying a few words. So I must say, and I'm saying that in particular because I'm saying that to most of my younger friends, it's wonderful to know a little bit of other languages, including Mamelotion, because you never know in the world what happens to you. You may come to Japan and you could, at least there, if you go to the synagogue with a little bit of Mamelotion, you probably make yourself understood. So I tried to explain the situation, and he said, leave it to me. Anyway, he came back the next day and he said, wait another day. I'm trying my best to get you off the ship. And I think we were 2 nights on the ship. And on the third day he came and he got us off. He put us into a boarding house in the Via 20 Settembre in Genoa, which again was a one bedroom with nothing else, just one bedroom. But we were happy, where at least we got off the ship, we were on land again. And there we were given again, spaghetti for breakfast, spaghetti for lunch, spaghetti for dinner. Now, I spent the first night in the one bedroom with my parents and my sister. And next door was a young man. He was called himself Xantopoulos. He was a Greek student, so he said, of about possibly about 25, 26 years of age, who said, I speak a little bit of German and a little bit of English. Not nice that brother and sister and parents sleep in one bedroom. I got a nice big bedroom. Would your parents permit me that you can have a bed in my room? You can spend the day with them, but at least at night you are not with them. So my parents consented. And he said, everything is fine. You be with your parents all day. But at night, unfortunately, roughly about midnight, I got to visit some friends of mine. But you can always come with me. We go to a cafe, and we probably have a coffee or something. You can sit next to the table so you're not on your own. And I will meet some friends of mine. And that's what happened the next day. And that what happened, I think, the next evening as well, the 2 evenings. And then the police came and took him away. And he said, not to worry, I'll be back. Anyway, he was away one night and he did come back the next day by saying, no, it's fine, they investigated and I'm fine. And he took us out, I know, for coffee. My father wanted to pay and he said, don't worry, Mussolini pays. Only to find out later on, what he meant was, and what he did tell us afterwards, that he was helping Jewish families to take out money because he had an uncle in New York and an uncle in Greece. Between them, he managed to get the money out and then help and give it to the Jewish families. That's how he met some of the Jewish families, which at that time, actually, I didn't know and he didn't want to tell me. So these are my experiences there. And then...
But he couldn't help get your father's money.
No.
Too late.
Then the visa. Oh, no. The visa arrived the next day while I was already with him. Now, the visas arrived. We went to the British consul. We gave him our passport. We got the visa. But now to come to England, we have to go to France, for which we had to get a visa as well. So we went to the French consul to get a visa, and he said, sorry, we don't give visas to Jewish people. So we came back there, and we told our friend, our Greek friend, what happened. Ah, he said, don't worry, give me your passports. No, my parents, I said, you can't pass with passport. He said, well, that's the only way. I arrange something, I get you the visa. So reluctantly, I think my parents parted with it, but he went with him wherever it was. And he came out, he gave us the passports back. What do you think when we opened the passports? The J was disappeared.
The what?
The J. You know, the Germans put a J, a Jew, into the passport. He rubbed it out, or he had somebody to take it out. He said, look, somebody messed up, but the passport is genuine. So he said, I haven't done anything with the passport. The visa is fine inside. And with that, we managed to get through France. We arrived in Dover.
Now, what about the journey through France? Do you remember anything? Was that by train?
By train, yes. By train and then by ship, yes. So we were then, so far, interrogated when we arrived. And I know that a few people went round looking at the passport forward and backward, but nobody said anything, and we were given entry visas. And so we entered England.
Were you interrogated at all? Or questioned?
We were questioned. But I think my parents were more questioned than we were questioned. But I can't remember now exactly what.
And when did you get to England? Do you know the date? 39?
Yeah. Wait a minute. War broke out in 39, so it must have been early 39. We were then given accommodation to the Jewish Refugee Fund, which was very nice.
What did they do for you?
I'm just trying to think, what did they do for me? All I remember, I got a job as a waiter, and my sister got a job as a waiter.
Now, where were you living? In London?
Yes, in Shoot Up Hill.
Shooter's Hill?
Shoot Up Hill, Kilburn.
Right. So, tell me about your jobs, then.
Well, then we were trying to find something to earn, and we found that the easiest way to earn quickly some money was to become a waiter. So my sister started work as a waitress at Lyons Corner House, and I started as a waiter in the Czech restaurant in Edgware Road, London, as a waiter.
And what do you think of that?
Well, to my best, I waited and asked for what they wanted to eat, because at that time we already had what they call, I don't know if they call it utility meals, you know. The maximum was, I think, 5 shillings. You couldn't spend more than 5 shillings, you couldn't spend less than 5 shillings. A 5 shilling was a 3-course menu, which was, if you call it government-controlled, for which you got a soup, a main dish, and a sweet. you couldn't ask for any more or you couldn't ask for any less. It was what we call a utility meal. And it was 5 shillings per person. See, we were eager to hear if somebody didn't have their sweets or didn't want their soup, and we quickly took it to the galley and had to take quickly ourselves.
Now, how was your English? I mean,
My English was, I would say, a little bit better than school English. I managed, because I learned already quite a bit in South Africa. So I wouldn't say it was a perfect English, but yes, we learned, if I may use it, the most wonderful translations of some of the German words which were translated to English, but not the meaning, but the actual words. So sometimes by translating the words into English, but not into meaning English, they came a different way of it. Stop me for a moment, I'm trying to.
Okay.
Like, jump in the air, and I said, why should I? Because in German it sounds different. It isn't the English way. And therefore, we use some of the words which were translated by words, but not by meanings. And therefore, they became a different meaning. And we made over jokes about it because this was one way of learning English, by learning how to translate meanings, but not words.
Now, where were you living? You were living in Kilburn, but what was your accommodation like?
It was, I remember, with Mrs. Oliphant and number 2, Tempest Kloof, which again was a one room with a little alley where I slept with my sister. But we paid very little money. It must have been organized by the Jewish organization. But how shall we say? We were happy because we were a family. We were happy we have mother and father to talk to. And we were happy that we already found some income by working.
Did your father and mother work, or were they unable to find jobs?
They didn't. My father, after a while, also applied, and he eventually, I don't know how long afterwards, he managed to get a job in a laundry. And he worked as a, we'll call it a laundry worker. You know, carrying the dirty laundry from one place to the other.
Did he mind that? I mean, it's a bit of a come down from running 3 shops.
Yes, yes, yes. But I think we were, how shall I say, modern enough or intelligent enough to say, you got to take life the way it is now. Let's get on with it. And that's... So my father worked there. Now,
how did you get on with the English? I mean, what I mean is, did you encounter any anti-Semitism at this stage?
No, I didn't encounter any anti-Semitism. In actual fact, I think I was always what I can say is, we then found out about the Jewish community. And at that time, there wasn't really much of a Jewish community. And it was just in the early beginning where a dozen or a few dozen Jewish families, or rather men, got together and said, wouldn't it be nice if we can start a Jewish Austrian congregation where we can pray on Friday night meet our fellow sufferers, if you call it like that, and keep a Friday night. And I remember that my father, together with quite a few others, sat there, and they started a Jewish community in Belsize Park, which is today still Belsize Park Synagogue in Swiss Cottage. Which I remember at that time, on Friday night, was, if I could only remember his name, but I may remember later.
Don't worry.
Was a German rabbi who gave still the sermons in German with very little English attachment, but half in Hebrew naturally, but quite a lot was given in German. And that Belsize Park Synagogue is still happily in existence and today has a membership of, I think, over 2,000 people, not only of German Austrian, but of a lot of other English families, unfortunately too small to keep the high holidays, but still Friday and Saturday still has keeps the synagogue there. So unfortunately over the high holidays we have to hire all outside and have it there. So I'm very happy they belong to it and they look after it, and I must say I'm very happy at my age, when it comes to my birthday, they still phone up or come and say, hello, Bobby, how are you?
Now, I forgot, but can you just tell us how you came to be called Bobby? Because we'll just drop that story in now, because that's from when you were in Germany, you got the nickname Bobby. Can you just tell that story on the tape?
Wait a minute. Tell your story. What?
How you became known as Bobby.
Ah.
It happened when you were in
no.
Germany.
Having been in the rowing club for a year or two, I made friends with a number of the boys, and one of the boys said, oh, I'm going to England next, in 2 weeks. Oh, how come? He said, yes, my parents allow me. There's a ship going from Hamburg to Greenwich, and you can spend 4 days in London. So I went to my parents and I begged them, can I join as well? And they said, no, you're too young. But eventually I persuaded, like most boys, persuaded my parents. And I took the train with that boy from Berlin, who also was in Berlin, to Hamburg. From Hamburg we went on the ship, which was only a small ship, I can't remember, but probably about 250, 300 people on the ship. They were all youngsters. We arrived in England.
When, 36-ish, 35-ish? How old
yes.
were you?
How old were they? I think I must have been 15 or something like that, yes, because I was in the rowing club.
So 1934.
Yes. And we arrived in Greenwich. We were given tickets for the underground, and we took the underground to Oxford Street or somewhere like that. And then we roamed London to the main street. And at that time, in not recently, Oxford Street, they were the traders, one next to the other. And one of the traders had all sorts of things there, and one of them was a policeman's helmet. And I said, hooray, that's something I'm going to take home. So I got hold of that policeman's helmet, and proudly with the other bits and pieces, we saw London, and I think we probably stayed only two nights there, you know. May only be one night, I cannot remember. And we came back on the ship, and then came back from the ship back to Hamburg, from Hamburg by train to London. And there, proudly at the station, I put on the policeman's helmet, and I greeted my parents. And people said, look, he looks like a Bobby, English Bobby. And since then, everybody calls me, instead of called, Bobby.
And that stuck.
And that's how I stuck.